Yeah, so hello and welcome to this week's instalment of Nucleus Investment Insights. And we've entitled this one today, The Aussie Dollar to Dazzle. And what we're going to be doing is peeling back and having a bit of a look at the future of the Australian dollar, one of our favourite topics here at Nucleus Wealth and the MB Fund. I'm joined today with our chief strategist sitting across the room from me, David Llewellyn-Smith. Hello, David.
Hi, Tim.
And next to him is Nucleus Wealth and MB Fund's head of investments, Damien Klassen. G'day, Damien.
Hi, Tim.
Glad the microphone works there. We didn't test that your one before, so we're moving on. Excellent. So we'll jump into the agenda. So we've got the Australian dollar, and for those that may have followed us, we've run a similar one, and this is a bit of an update from, I think it was about six or eight months ago. Quite a bit's happened since then.
12, actually.
12 months, was it? Okay. Mm-hmm. So we work on a five drivers valuation model. So we're looking at the Chinese growth in Australia's terms of trade. Interest rate differentials. We'll then be looking at investor sentiment and technicals, and finishing off with the relative strength of the US dollar. And as always, we finish off then with some reflections on our investment impacts and the way that these themes impact the portfolios at the Nucleus Wealth and the MB Fund. So with no further ado, we can kick off with number one. So we're looking at the Australian and global growth, and we've got a chart up here, China's broad credit. I'll get David to run through it. And just quickly for those listening in, there is a link to the webinar slides in the blurb for the podcast. So jump into it, David. What have we got?
Thanks, Tim. So Australia and global growth these days is pretty much Australia and Chinese growth in terms of Forex.
Sure.
And so as we've pointed out many occasions, the key chart for looking ahead for that relationship is Chinese broad credit. And you know, we've seen this chart before where there's the sort of declining three mountains of year-on-year growth in broad credit. And you can see that we've just been through a very heavy decline over, a couple of years after the big stimulus in early 2016. And through that decline, the Aussie dollar was up and down but trended lower for the most part. After a bounce in 2016, that is. And so, you know, we're expecting Chinese growth to slow as it has done through the latter part of last year and then into the first half of this. And then the Chinese, as you can see, had sort of toying with a reversal of this over the first few months of 2019. I don't think they did it willingly.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were, you know, keen to continue the deleveraging path or restructuring, but the trade war intervened, and so, you know, they've hit the gas, you know, kind of intermittently this year. It's been a few months of really tearaway credit growth, but others that have been mediocre, and so as you can see, broad credit has been kind of in fits and starts, bottoming out.
It's worth saying as well, this graph understates, so this graph, for people who are not watching, it's sort of showing the growth rate in the broad credit. And there's sort of like the peaks are sort of getting gradually lower, but it's worth noting that the actual debt that's being pumped out is increasingly the actual absolute value is much higher because
you're a higher base each
yeah,
time.
You're only growing sort of 10-15%, but it's on a much greater base of debt.
Yeah, exactly right. So so what does this tell us about, you know, sort of immediate prospects for our first driver of Forex value? It tells us that the Chinese growth has been struggling enough for authorities to toy with stimulus. They have been doing a little more of it, though it's far below the 2016 level at this point. Now, normally, you know, you would just wait and see how this played out, but there are a couple of factors that are quite atypical that have intervened. And so mean that this chart is not quite as important as it has been. And so we're going to swing over to the next slide to explain that. And this is Australia's terms of trade. Now, this one follows on directly from Chinese growth usually.
Mm.
However, this year, when we would normally have seen Australian commodity prices coming off quite hard because of that Chinese deleveraging and slowing growth, we have in fact seen the opposite, and that's largely thanks to a terrible accident in Brazil called at one of their wet processing mines, where a dam collapsed, killing 300 people, and that has spiked Australia's terms of trade when normally they would have crashed at this juncture in the cycle. Now, it cannot be emphasised how significant this is for the overall Australian economy. This has saved our bacon, in a sense, because even though the trickle-down for this income flow is much diminished from the way it used to operate in terms of the real economy, what it's done is completely saved the budget, which would be falling apart right now if it weren't for the Vale accident, the Brazilian Vale accident. So,
and just to give some colour, I guess, to that Vale accident, so basically they'd had one mine collapse about 4 or 5 years ago, and then they went and checked, you know, and they rushed around, and that killed, I think, about 20-odd people, and that they rushed around and checked all their other dams and said, yeah, everything's fine, and then the next one collapsed, which killed 300 people. And so what that meant, and neither of those were... the first one was quite big. The second one was actually almost about to be decommissioned, but the broader flow has been there's been a whole bunch of other mines shut down, and Brucutu 2, which is probably the biggest one there, but it's a significant part. Vale is one of the world's largest iron ore exporters and basically the only real competitor to BHP and Rio. And so you've just taken out one of the competitors and prices have shot higher. And so it really is a... it's something where you can see that sitting in courts and people wanting to take extra care to make sure they get it right this time. And so maybe, 6 to 12 months worth of extra delays to get that on, because it's not sort of seen as it's no longer a one-off event. It's now something they need to go through, mine by mine, dam by dam, and make sure that they're 100% on it. And from Vale's perspective, they're not... it's obviously a bad thing for them to have lost the this much iron ore, but because they've actually had the price of iron ore has doubled or close to doubled, the profitability is not that bad for them. So that it's actually not a it's not like it's crying out they have to rush out and get all this stuff online as fast as possible. There are, I guess there's not something. I guess what I'm trying to get to is. Maybe the courts will turn around and you'll see them all turn back on tomorrow, but we doubt it. We think there's probably more likely that they spend 6-12 months to really go through properly.
Well, and the fact that it's happened multiple times, I guess, just means that there's going to be more punitive sort of impact from you'd like to think anyway, if the government is run properly.
Certainly, there's a number of execs looking like jail time and things like that. Wow. So if the former exec who's no longer with the company is looking at jail time for not checking all the dams properly, and you're the new guy in there, you're probably going to take a few months and profits might be a bit lower, but not that much lower because prices have shot up and make sure everything's right.
So the upshot for those first two slides then is that the Australian dollar currently has very strong terms of trade support. This is one of the two major drivers in the currency value. And right now, it's all go.
Okay.
In fact, as you can see, our terms of trade are virtually at the pre-GFC high. We're effectively in a third mining boom.
Yeah. But it's artificial, potentially, in this case.
It is artificial, yes. So that probably brings us to our next slide, which is what is the second major driver of the Australian dollar value, and that is yield spreads, interest rate differentials to other countries.
Actually, sorry, can I just add one more thing on that iron ore?
Yes,
yeah, sure.
The other thing with the... when you see iron ore spike, usually then you get a supply response and you get a bunch of the smaller guys sort of looking to re-kick on open mines and things like that. Because there's all these Brazilian ones sitting out there that'll come on at some stage, there's less likely we're going to see supply come from sort of mid-tier Australian ones sort of reopening mines that might have closed at lower prices, because you got to look at it and go, well...
The behemoth's going to come back online at some point.
It'll take me 6 or 12 months to get this thing up and running, and next thing you know... Brazil's back open and the prices are back down to $50-$60.
Okay. Yep, sure. Good point. Across to yield spreads again, David?
Sure. And so this is simply the difference between interest rates in different countries. And what we've got there is the major one, the Australia-US yield spreads. And as you can see, ever since the 2011 peak in the Australian terms of trade, and the end of the second mining boom, it's been one-way traffic down. We had a very positive yield spread at that point, where you know, your markets were effectively encouraging you to borrow in US dollars and then go and plonk it in an Australian bank or Australian asset of some kind. And then that's now completely reversed, where you, the market's encouraging you to borrow Australian dollars and then go and send it somewhere else. Or sell your Australian dollars, rather, and go and buy something else. So, because we got down to sort of, you know, minus 1% at the short end of the curve, I think it was, which is way down where it was, you know, at the turn of the millennium when the Aussie dollar was down below 50 cents. So, this is a huge headwind for a currency, just as large as the terms of trade was in terms of tailwind. So, these two have been kind of fighting out this monumental struggle in the value of the currency, and this one has been winning so far, at least over the last 18 months.
So just quickly, so mentioning before the turn of the millennium and the yield spread sort of being vis-a-vis equal. So the key driver here, the difference between a 60 cent and a, say, where we're at the moment, nearly 70 or 70, is the terms of trade piece.
Yes, that's right.
That's the primary difference.
That's the difference between now and 2000.
Yep, okay.
That's the reason the Aussie is 20 cents higher.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we'd be way down.
Sure.
Now, there's one more thing to note here, which is going to be really the a pivotal part of this discussion, and that is, you can see in the far right-hand side of this chart, there's a little hook upwards. Nobody could say that whether it's a bottom at this point. It's certainly not convincing as such, but in the last kind of 6 weeks, the negative yield spread has started to fall. That is, US interest rates have been falling faster than Australian.
Mm-hmm.
And so, potentially, there's a bit of a reversal underway in the negative yield spread. So, we'll come back to that. So, the third major force, not as big as the other two, but very important in short-term movements, is investor sentiment. And this chart is from the CFTC. This is speculative positioning in the currency. And when you have those bars sitting above zero, that means that a lot of people are long the Australian dollar. And when they're below, it's a lot of people are short. And at the moment, you can see that the positioning is very bearish. Not record bearish, but pretty close to it. So, you know, you can take that either way. You can follow the market and think the market's got it right, but the risk is, and this is the way I tend to think, in contrarian terms, is if it's so short, everything's got to go wrong for the market to be right. And so if there is a turn in some of the drivers, it means that there could be a quite sharp snap back when there's a lot of short covering in this positioning. So, sentiment is bearish, and, you know, that's bearish, but it could also be bullish. So, swinging across to our next driver, that's technicals. I've got here a weekly chart of the Aussie-US. I haven't gone into it too deeply, but I think basically you can see that this is quite a long-term chart, you can see. You know, the structure since 2011 has been this immense sort of downtrend, and it's kind of formed this rather bearish-looking descending triangle, which is very large, which would suggest that if we get a downside break, you know, much below the support line that we're sort of around, you know, 68 cents, then, you know, we could see some considerable further downside. So the chart on the Aussie is pretty bearish, even though some of the mixed factors are bullish. It looks like the chart's pretty bearish. Okay, so we swing to the flip side of that, which is the technicals on the US. And this is obviously a larger question just than the technicals, but the US technicals are sort of roughly neutral, but probably the more important question about the US dollar is more broadly the US dollar, the US economy, of course, and how it's going to play into the relative strength of the US dollar. Because being the opposite side of the exchange rate, obviously it can influence the value, and in fact, sometimes it can completely dominate it. So our read on the US economy at the moment is that it's been actually pretty good. It's been slowing, but you know, now there are a bunch of headwinds that are mounting that are making it more difficult. Obviously got the trade war, which is starting to blow back into sentiment in markets, if not so much the real economy. The real economy is sort of plodding along. And the real economy kind of is also slowing just naturally after the Trump fiscal stimulus, which has got this kind of little cliff on the end of it, as tax rebates come off. And so the US economy was kind of already going to slow anyway, but then this trade war's happened, and so markets have started to really kind of freak out a little. And so, you know, that's going to diminish activity there. And so, you know, it hasn't taken all that much market damage for the Fed to suddenly be in a bit of a panic. That is also in part because, you know, we've got oil crashing very quickly, which is the sort of the third potential headwind for the US, because the oil patch in the US has become the swing producer globally. That's the unconventional oil. That's quite a large sector in the economy, with a lot of high value wages and what have you. So when it slows, it tends to drag down wages growth, and you get you know, what is a tight labor market suddenly becomes a bit squishy in terms of wages, and it's not, you know, the overall story softens quite quickly, and we've seen that repeatedly when oil's crashed over the last couple of years, most notably at the end of 2015, which, you know, kind of paused US labor wages growth. So there's these three headwinds that are kind of feeding back into the US economy now. And that's been enough to absolutely slaughter US bond yields. And, you know, markets are now pricing 75 basis points of Fed cuts, more or less by the end of the year, which has been a total swingabout from, you know, only 6 weeks ago.
Is that three cuts of 25, or how do they operate over there? Similar to here. Okay.
Yeah. Now, I think that's roughly a fair enough scenario for the US economy and Fed action. Although there is this paradox where, you know, bad news becomes good news at the prospect of US Federal Reserve easing, and so markets start to price the easing before it comes, and then it's no longer necessary. and so you know, you got to go through all these kind of fits and starts on stuff. But I do think the trade war intensification and damage is going to continue to slow the US economy, less so than other major economies, but still materially, and most particularly the feedback, the blowback will come if US company earnings start to get hit, and that's, you know, quite likely in terms of the various, you know, kind of trade war intensifications that are coming out of China attacking various firms, and you know, so if the stocks are very highly valued, and so if they start to come off hard, then consumption will get hit, etc. So base case is that the US dollar will keep slowing and the Fed will cut. And we really need to see, you know, how much more trade war there is before we can determine how much of both slowing there will be and cuts there will be from the Fed. At this point, I think we can bake in 75 to 100 in cuts. And so, you know, that brings us back to our first couple of charts, of course, where, you know, we've got very high terms of trade in Australia, which is a very big tailwind. Vale is going to take its time bringing back production, which is a key driver in those terms of trade. And so, you know, we think that they're more, mine ore is probably peaked, but, you know, may not have. It's seasonally quite weak in China at the moment for terms of steel. Mm-hmm. If Vale doesn't get another decent mine up and running by, say, August or even July, iron ore could run again. Mm-hmm. And that could happen straight into Fed cuts. So, you know, it's a very peculiar situation because, you know, you've had this artificial constraint just placed on iron ore supply. And so, anyway, that's what it is. So,
but part of that means for Australia, if we're sort of looking at this scenario where US has been the source of demand for most of the world over the last couple of years. They've sort of been the growth powerhouse. So even though you're seeing the US slow down, the question is, will some of the other peripheral countries slow down even more? So you end up in a position where, you know, these, yes, US is cutting and US is looking a lot weaker than it was. And so arguably the US dollar should fall. But if you're also losing the primary source of demand for places like China, Europe, Japan, some of these bigger exporting countries, because US's demand is taking fewer exports, and you've got Trump trying to onshore a lot more, and so you're getting tariffs and things like that, then you know, the effect could be worse on other countries. So that's one part. The other part for the Australian, on the Australian dollar side, is you want the Australian dollar to do some of the heavy lifting for the RBA. So if you can get the Aussie dollar down, then Australia becomes a more attractive exporter, you know, and there's you get less offshoring, and there's a whole bunch of effects in terms of that are positive in terms of employment. So on one hand, you know, it is a boon to have this iron ore price much higher. It helps the government revenues and gets royalties, and there's some companies that are very much beneficiaries on the Australian stock market.
Mm.
But the question is, if we need to go through a transition period to sort of reset following the mining boom, then this isn't helpful. It's just moving the actual adjustment out further and making it sort of more painful in the end. It means you will need the RBA to do more, and you'll need the government to step in and spend more as well in terms of more fiscal support, which we think they're quite a long away from doing. They're still talking about the magics of running budget surpluses and things like that. So we think it'll take and the tax cuts, you know, most of the tax cuts that are being passed are sort of 5-10 years in the future. And so we do think it will take a while for them to turn that ship around. We've already got the RBA trying to push them, trying to say, you know, it can't just be all us guys. You need to get out and do things. But on the same token, you've still got the treasurer and the government talking about surpluses.
And you mentioned before as well the boost in the terms of trade, artificial or not, the key difference, say now, between, say, you know, back in the actual real mining boom, is that is there a point in fact saying that the mines are all built now, effectively, and so these, we're getting a boost, you know, there's a boost in prices, obviously, because there's a little bit of constraint on supply. Mm-hmm. However, we're not getting that reflected back, as you mentioned, through to the real economy, because the mines are built. Is that where you were
Absolutely.
Going with that one?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the key difference between the two cycles. There are a bunch of others, but that's the main one. So you don't get any wages growth as a result.
Yep.
There's no jobs.
Yep.
There's three mechanisms by which the terms of trade enter the economy, if you like. One, that's the first one, is investment, which will be missing. And in fact, so far has been falling, just on the tail end of the last boom. And the second one is the budget. And then you get tax cuts, and we're going to see some of that. But as Damo said, it's nowhere near enough, although there will be probably more coming. And the third one is through stocks. And so, you know, we've had a reasonable run-up in stocks, and certainly mining stocks. But that one's not huge either. The big one really is the budget and investment.
Yep.
And, you know, the budget was so far behind the eight ball, we've really had very little in terms of tax cuts over the last... Well, we've had none. This will be the first round. We've had tax hikes non-stop since the coalition got into power, despite its protestations to the opposite. that's the key difference between now and 2008, if you like. But just going back a little, I just wanted to say that you know, if you do get the negative yields falling away a little as the Fed cuts more than the RBA, and I think it probably will over the next 6 months, and markets will be obsessed by that even if it doesn't happen. It'll be the reflexive kind of thought patterns of it happening, and you've still got those high terms of trade. I think there is a pretty decent risk that the Aussie dollar will rise in the short term on the back of that. Depending on how chaotic it all gets, if it gets really out of hand with the trade war and blow back in through equity markets and what have you, I still think that the US dollar is likely to attract the safe haven bid, which would help protect offshore assets and stuff. But I think in the immediate term, you know, there are these tailwinds sudden tailwinds for the Aussie dollar. At least while those terms of trade are high, they'll probably take precedence in the market, and especially since market positioning is so short, you know, they're going to have to cover some of those shorts, which we saw in our sentiment slide.
Yep.
However, as Damo said, you know, the US is still the pivot of world growth and demand, and moreover, America First is exaggerating that big time, and so it will be difficult for the US dollar to fall terribly far. And you know, as we see the global economy slow and all this, Europe's buggered. It's just stuck in recession. And so, the ECB is definitely going to have to come in with, well, I can't say definitely, but it's going to have to do more. And it's already, you know, it's zero, so that'll be QE. The PBOC, as soon as the Fed cuts, I reckon the PBOC is going to pile in behind it. Its domestic economy is really struggling, despite with the turn in credit that we've noted in our first slide. It needs more juice. And so, you know, it can't cut while it's afraid that the yuan's going to fall, which obviously has trade war implications as well as, you know, economic stability problems in capital outflow. And so I think the PBOC is going to follow as well. So you're going to have this period where everyone's cutting. And that, you know, it's going to take a lot of sort of sting out of the RBA also cutting. I think the RBA will also cut by 100 basis points over the next year. But, you know, because I don't think our economy is going to spring out of its slump either. Yesterday's GDP was terrible. The 0.4 was flattering, if anything. And it's been that way for 9 months. The RBA has totally misread the economy and sunk it into a quagmire. As has the federal government. And so it's going to take quite an effort to drag it out. It's going to come out of it like a nanogenarian. And so, you know, there'll be cuts everywhere. But the Fed, you know, is kind of, don't fight the Fed, as they say. The Fed's the gorilla in the room when it starts cutting. As long as you don't have a real safe haven bid, you know, in a catastrophe, the US dollar's likely to tail off for a while. Again, working against that, obviously the driver of this is the trade war, and so there's actually a lot of negativity around the Aussie dollar on that basis as the driver for just for general kind of instability and what have you. So in political risk terms, that's certainly something that's going to weigh on the Aussie. So I certainly don't see it getting very far. And, you know, it won't be long before the terms of trade start to come off pretty hard again, because, you know, China's going to struggle to stimulate in this global environment. And, you know, Vale comes back slowly but surely, and the dollar starts to fall away again. And so still on track for much lower over the short-term period. Just see that sort of upside risk in the near term. So I guess that's kind of summarising somewhat what we've got up there on June 2019. So, you know, world and slowing on trade war and abortive Chinese reflation and European malaise. Base case for this to get worse. High terms of trade from here as iron ore deflates, but spreads with the US will diminish as Fed outpaces RBA. So, you know, my best guess is AUD higher in the short term, but then rolling relatively quickly, not getting terribly far, and then rolling away.
Okay.
Again.
All right. Fantastic.
Yeah. And not really what we'd, from an investment perspective, not what we'd sort of call a tradable rally. There's for people who are a bit nimbler and want to jump in and out of these things, maybe there's something there, but it is a...
Yeah, it's definitely a speculator's rally. It's not
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, you're playing that. It's a dangerous game to play in terms of saying, well, we think the Aussie dollar's headed lower for economic reasons, but there's short-term reasons why it might bounce higher is not really something, from an investment perspective, you want to... You know, rush out and commit heaps of capital to that type of trade. And for us, it's, you know, we generally prefer just to stick with the right. Well, you know, we've been very much on the overweight, international and overweight some US dollar assets. We'll pull that back a little bit,
okay,
and then sort of wait for the next wave to come, and then try and catch those ones rather than trying to sort of paddle against the the tide.
Okay. And locally, so from a sector point of view, obviously we've covered off on the fact that the there's been a bit of a spike in, say, mining, the mining sector at the moment, potentially short-lived, a bit of a no-go zone for investment in your eyes, do you think?
You got to pick your areas, but it's mainly been iron ore though. I guess that's the main thing to come back to is iron ore has been the real epicenter of it, because most of the other metals have been fading away.
Okay.
Base metals are all hitting new lows. Copper, especially.
So you can make an argument around your best argument for you from the bullish side is that look, China's can't let their growth slow because otherwise they'll have civil unrest and trade wars and all that type of stuff, and so they're going to unleash some massive stimulus program.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it'll happen. Maybe it won't. But that's your best bet from the bullish side. From the bearish side is that, well, these are, you know, we are at cyclical highs and we're gradually going to fade off those as China will stimulate, but it's not going to be, you know, they're already stimulating pretty hard.
Yep.
There's not much more they can do, and that you're just going to see those tail off. So we sort of we flipped to probably 4 or 5 months ago and bought a bit of iron ore to sort of hedge against this.
Yep.
And we were sort of looking and going, okay, well, that hedge worked. We could have been further overweight, but you know, we certainly hedged that position because we were a long way underweight mining.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're starting to go, well, let's just lighten up on that bit. We've had a good run, you know, 20-30% on some of those stocks.
Yep.
And now the time to take some profits rather than loading up for some sort of grandiose vision of what China's going to do.
Yep. Okay. Yeah.
I don't think China's really going to struggle to simulate here. We haven't got this chart in today, but we pointed it out before that their floor area under construction has never been higher than today. And the trade war is going to really slam their industrial economy. And, you know, these are the two major drivers of Chinese growth. So, you know, obviously they're talking about trying to generate more services industries and what have you, but, you know, that's fits and starts.
So, long tail as, or long start as well, you would have thought.
Yeah, services. And so, yeah. You know, their go-to is to build more.
Yep.
But by golly, I mean, they're building so much now. Like, how much can you build?
The diminishing returns she was spoken about in the past.
Yeah, trying to get it up from such high levels is really, you know, it's phenomenal how much they're building right now. There's never been more.
Yeah, and you need to then, you're making a bet. If they do that, they're making an even bigger bet because they're saying, okay, we've already got, whatever, 15-20% of our population, you know, in this market just sitting there building more stuff. Let's go add another 5% of the population to go out and build more stuff. And so you're making the end adjustment even more difficult.
Exactly. And in debt terms, of course, as well.
And the amount of building they're doing, most of it, Chinese population isn't growing, and the number of people moving to cities is still more people moving to cities, but it's decreasing. The absolute number of people moving to cities is lower than what it was. So what they have to do now is knock stuff down in order to build more stuff.
Build again. And just while we're on that expected perhaps support of the Aussie dollar, another pretty common trade in Australia is the dollar exposed industrials, so companies that get a lot of their revenue from offshore. Is there opportunities potentially there if they get knocked around and maybe cool off a little bit share price wise to pick up some bargains or something caught your eye on?
We'd love to see some of those come back. So that's been a trade we've been very much on for the last couple of years, but less and less over the last 12 months we've been winding back on that trade, not because of any sort of fundamental view about the actual earnings of the companies, but just because their valuations have just blown out to it's getting very, very hard to justify. You know, some of our best ones, like some of the healthcare sort of CSLs and Cochlears and stuff like that, are just trading at 30 plus times earnings, and which is sort of, you know, twice as expensive as the rest of the market. While they are good growth and, you know, all the fundamentals are still there, there's at a certain stage you've just got to throw your hands up and say, well, at those prices, I can't see why. You know, you're basically hoping that you're buying them hoping that somebody else will pay more for it rather than buying thinking that you'll actually get a decent result out of it in terms of from valuation perspective and dividends and earnings growth. So
it's greater full trade as opposed to an investment decision sort of thing.
Absolutely. So I'd love to see a few more. I'd love to see some of those, you know, if the Aussie dollar does pop up a little bit, a few more cents, and some of those pull back, then we'll certainly be reloading in that area. But valuations are still right up there. It's still very difficult. And the Australian market last month, I mean, it's worth noting, post the election, a big outperformance for the Australian stock market, sort of maybe 5-6% versus international markets.
Mm-hmm.
So huge performance on the back of the election. I think there will now be a bit of a settling in period and going, okay, well, yes, it might be better than what it was going to be. A few risks have removed, but the outlook's still very grim. And Australian markets, basically every subsector you go through is more expensive than than even the US comparative sector, when the US is sort of one of the most expensive markets out there. And so it's very hard to justify buying Australian stocks when they're so much more expensive. And the growth rate, you would think, is, from my view, is worse than a lot of other countries. But that's where we're sitting at the moment. So valuations are the real handbrake at the moment, I think, on future returns from Australian stocks.
And just finally, a topic that we haven't spoke about much, but is there any impact at all in things like precious metals, the price of gold? So we've got potential stimulus out of the EU, China. You know, how do you think this might parlay into things like gold?
The only one that ever matters to gold is the US dollar.
Mm-hmm.
To the extent that the Fed is it moves earlier or more aggressively than anyone else, then mm-hmm. gold's going to benefit.
Right,
And probably more than the AUD rises, because mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to, as I said, leap out of the blocks here. And the RBA is still going to cut. So, gold's a pretty good play right now.
Okay.
That's the initial phases of a new cycle of easing. Then you've got... the second wave of ECB and, maybe in the BOJ, but also the PBOC, and that's going to obviously put upward pressure on the US dollar. So
just for anyone not versed in all the acronyms, we're talking about China and Japan and Europe.
Yeah, China, Japan, and
central banks.
Central banks.
Yep.
And that'll counteract some of the falling US dollar pressure from the Fed.
Mm-hmm.
So that gold trade, might be right now and may not last all that long.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the risk with that trade that things get really out of hand with the trade war.
Mm.
And, it crashes equities, which takes down the US consumer. And you get some sort of flow on financial or debt event coming out of that. And I still think in that scenario, the likelihood is a bid into the US dollar rather than gold.
As a safe haven.
Yes. Mm. Typically, that's what happens. I mean, we haven't had a good old trade war in a long time, and maybe gold will outperform this time, but it's generally the undollar most ahead of all other drivers.
Yep, okay.
Gold. So you do trade gold or position in gold with that risk at this point that the cycle takes a real heavy blow and the US dollar catches a bid.
Okay. Yeah, sure thing. All right. Thanks, gentlemen. Well, on that note, we'll just quickly run through what we're talking about next week. So same bat time, same bat channel, Thursday the 13th of June. And we're looking at, we've called it for the moment, working title, the rate of interest. So we'll be looking at or diving into the impacts of the RBA's very recent announcement that they're dropping rates for the first time in a couple of years, I believe. As you've heard today, expected to perhaps drop another four times now, which is some news. So we'll look forward to hearing all about that next week. Same bat time, same bat channel, Nucleus Wealth live webinar page, www.nucleuswealth.com/webinar. And on that note...
Well, that's it for now, and thanks for watching. If you like what you heard today and you'd like to hear more, head over to nucleuswealth.com/subscribe. Give us your email address, and in return, we'll send you a weekly email with new webinar topics, links for our podcasts, and other news from Nucleus Wealth. I certainly hope you've got something out of today, as I have, and we'll look forward to catching you with the next one. Cheers.